Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week is New York State Assemblymember Deborah Glick, a Democrat who represents New York's 66th Assembly District in Manhattan, including Greenwich Village. Glick first ran for the State Assembly in 1990 and won, becoming the first openly gay state legislator in New York State. She's served in the legislature for over 30 years, championing a number of progressive legislative causes and issues. And we can't thank you enough for joining us this week on the Capital Connection. Welcome, Assemblymember Deborah Glick.
Thank you so very much. I'm pleased to be here and honored.
Very kind of you to say. Well, to that end, I mean, we have just celebrated the independence of the country, July 4th. It's a democracy, supposedly, if we can keep it. And as we celebrate that independence, I couldn't help thinking of our conversation today that would be coming up and asking you this. Why can't we seem to come together over the common values of the United States?
Well, I do think that there have always been instances going back well into the early part of the 1900s. We saw isolationists and we saw, you know, on the eve of World War II, 40,000 Nazis gather in Madison Square Garden. So people, young people today may not realize that this underbelly of the country has always existed. People who have a very nativistic attitude have always been here. They have been given license in the last several years, and social media has played a role in that. But I do think that the majority of people want to live their life in freedom. They don't want the government telling them what they can or cannot read, and they want to have their children do better than they did. That is an impulse that everybody shares, and we have to somehow, and I do think that the current administration, and I think Joe Biden won based on the fact that he spoke to those shared values of caring for your community and caring for your neighbor as a really bedrock American value. And I think that forces on the other side that focus only on grievance are undermining that sense of community, that you care not just about what you have, you care about what other people have access to, and that you want to lift your neighbors up. You don't want to tread over them.
Well, and in stark contrast, I guess you would say, to the Biden administration on many of these issues, there stands the Supreme Court. And I'm thinking of two recent cases, right? I mean, you've got the conservative majority ruling in favor of the Christian graphic artists who design wedding websites, saying that, yeah, you can refuse to work with same-sex couples. And then, of course, affirmative action in colleges, you know, they certainly, in many ways, at least in their decisions, don't seem to represent the majority of Americans. And we haven't even mentioned the turning down of Roe v. Wade.
Well, I would just say that Justice Kagan made it clear in a recent comments that she made that the court is not subject to the public's review and as such should stick to the issues strictly of law and not get into public policy in the way that they have intruded themselves. First of all, I'm not an attorney, but I was always on the assumption that the courts did not handle hypothetical cases. You had to have real participants who were on either side, defendants, plaintiffs, and so forth. This was a case that was basically dragged up to the Supreme Court through lower courts without actually having this graphic artist with a customer. This was a made-up case, so it's all the more shocking. And the fact that this Supreme Court has said a protected class can be discriminated against is a dreadful, dreadful decision, and one that over time will not stand. In the same way that they clearly were, let me take a step back. The court, whether it's Chief Justice Roberts or Justice Alito, complained bitterly in public about how you can't challenge the legitimacy of the court. The court's legitimacy was undermined by Senator McConnell and President Trump by throwing out decades of procedures, normal procedures in the Senate, in order to specifically add two justices with a clear agenda. And that agenda was overturning Roe v. Wade, turning back voting rights, turning back affirmative action, and now turning back LGBTQ rights. So the court has itself undermined its own legitimacy, especially when we see the kind of casual personal corruption of some of the justices.
I just want to go one step further about Justice Thomas and his remarks when it comes to affirmative action. Someone who in the past has talked strongly in favor of it and having benefited from it, but then talking about having met a colleague who went, I believe, to Michigan, who talked about not putting his race on his college admissions, and Thomas saying he'd wish he had done that, didn't want to be made into a victim. What do you make of that argument? It came off to me as somewhat hypocritical.
Well, there is the old story of people who get ahead and pull the ladder up behind them, and he is a prime example of that. And, of course, it's not just the what is viewed by the public with some skepticism, the accepting very lavish gifts and of vacations, et cetera, which most people who work in any level of government are totally aware is verboten. It is also the involvement of his wife in extreme, really extreme right-wing activity, including what appears to be some involvement in communicating around January 6th insurrection. It is shocking. And I think that as we hold ourselves up to the world as a democracy, this Supreme Court is making a mockery of our 200 plus years of this experiment, which is an experiment that does not have to succeed, and there are people actively working against it.
So then I guess it's up to the states, right? I mean, New York among...
Well, that's what they said.
Yeah.
We're overturning it, a constitutional right that had been in place for 50 years. We're taking that away. It's up to the states. And now we see the same people who have pushed that now pushing for a national ban on abortion, turning us back from almost every industrialized nation.
Well, that's where I guess I was trying to say that's where you guys come in. I mean, right? The state legislature has protected New Yorkers when it comes to the issue of abortion, right? We want to protect equal rights for all. I'm sure in some ways we've already heard, right, when it comes to higher education, that SUNY is dedicated to making its own fix to affirmative action. So states have power here.
We absolutely do. And I was very proud that in 2019, seeing the landscape that my Reproductive Health Act, which codified Roe v. Wade for New York State, was passed and signed into law. And subsequently, several of my colleagues have passed additional protections for our licensed healthcare workers to be protected from overreach from other states when they are providing healthcare services within the scope of practice and protecting their licenses. And we need to continue to see where we can ensure that access is available. And Governor Hochul added additional dollars to the health care budget to ensure that our health care providers who provide reproductive health services have additional resources, not just to provide the services, but for security. Because as we know, there are harassment and attacks on health care providers. In my own district in Lower Manhattan, people will be surprised to learn that there are protesters outside of Planned Parenthood regularly on Saturday mornings as women are going to receive whatever health care they may need, much of which is not abortion services, but people don't care. These are religious fanatics. These are religious zealots. And the Supreme Court that imposed this dreadful decision around LGBTQ rights on the basis of religious freedom feels totally free in imposing other people's religious beliefs on the rest of us. So the inconsistency is not surprising, but it is enraging.
And it's to your point, you know, the loudest voices are heard, and often those loudest voices, including, for example, the strongest support for the former president, Donald Trump, is in the minority, but they get heard because they're loud.
Yes, and unfortunately, as all totalitarian leaders are, the former president is free in his urging of violence on others, in the attacks on drag shows. I mean, while we still allow AR-15s, assault-style weaponry, in the hands of individuals across the country, people with young children afraid that their children will be killed in school, and yet no action is taken on that, while we are concerned about people seeing a drag show. I've been reminded by friends that all of us grew up with Bugs Bunny cartoons, and in half of Bugs Bunny's cartoons, Bugs got into drag to make a fool of Elmer Fudd or Yosemite Sam, and it did not negatively impact American society. But this culture war is based on inflaming passions among ignorant or susceptible individuals, particularly around religious zealotry. And that's, you know, very concerning. And we see, you know, those who have been emboldened taking action, physically assaulting people. And I don't know how anyone can support the former president after January 6th. And to think that that was an appropriate way of petitioning the government.
Yeah, and I'm brought back to your comments earlier about how none of this is new in our society, but it has been inflamed in recent years. Now, I'm sure you're aware of or know of, because you listen to WAMC, Libby Post, longtime lobbyist, advocate for not only animal issues, but LGBTQ issues. Well, she's remarked in the past that she's a triple threat to many Americans who are on the side of hate because she's gay, a woman, and Jewish. And that made me think of you today, because you share those traits. And I'm sure in your lifetime, you know all about hate and how it's used to discriminate.
Well, you know, the rise of anti-Semitism we saw in Pittsburgh, the worst assault on the Tree of Life Synagogue, the greatest loss of life, and it in an anti-Semitic attack. And we see that in the attack, Dylann Roof, who attacked and murdered Black parishioners who had welcomed him into a Bible study. And
The Buffalo shooting.
And the Buffalo shooting, where a young man looked specifically for a zip code that had the highest percentage of African Americans and drove Now, he was a lot closer to New York City, but he didn't choose to go to New York City. He chose to go to a more vulnerable place in Buffalo, New York, in a quiet neighborhood right around the corner practically from our own majority leader, Crystal People Stokes, and murdered people there because he wanted to kill African Americans. And in many, many of these instances, the actors are young men. What is going on with and why are young men so disaffected and so easily twisted in their thinking? And we, as a society, have not really had that discussion. There's something wrong, and why are we allowing young people access to weaponry that they would normally only be able to have if they were in the military? And when you're in the military, you're not allowed to take your gun home. You have to turn it in, and it gets locked up and it's kept under key. And yet we have this belief, and the Supreme Court will take up another case. It has already eroded protections, gun safety protections in New York, and they intend to go back and do more. And so that is a serious, serious issue for us to confront, and we've tried to do what we can in New York State to keep New Yorkers safe, but that doesn't stop somebody from buying a weapon legally and bringing it into this state and doing what damage can be done to any particular group can be targeted. The fact that school children have been routinely murdered in their schools, that has not shocked the conscience of this country, is not just disappointing, it's scary.
Yeah, and it makes me think, you know, what are the solutions? What can be done? I mean, on the gun issue, we have a whole country where their laws are different in different states, and you've got illegal guns and complicates the issue. Now you've got ghost guns, so-called ghost guns that are out there. But you also have a society that is in love with guns. Our movies show it, our television shows. The Old West style is still in fashion in many ways in this country. So as you point out, the root of these problems goes much deeper in many cases than any legislation that we can pass.
Well, you know, we like to think of ourselves as being, you know, American exceptionalism. The reality is they had a terrible shooting in Australia and they picked up all the guns. They had the same circumstance recently. They had two mass shootings in Serbia, and in Serbia, people are turning in their guns. In Serbia. And we can't do that in the United States because we have a very strong gun lobby. And I don't want to hear from ultra-conservative MAGA Republicans about the gay lobby or the Jewish lobby. It is the gun lobby that controls so much of what happens. There is no reason why people need these military-style weapons. I understand people hunt, and that's fine. Some of them do so to feed their families, and some do it for trophy hunting, which I'm not crazy about. But is still allowed, and maybe we should think about glorifying killing in any way as a bad idea. But certainly you don't need an automatic weapon to hunt. So these are, if people want that for target practice, people enjoy that, then we should allow only licensed gun ranges, and you can go and you can have under lock and key those kind of weapons, and then you can go to your gun range and enjoy target practice with these weapons. But they shouldn't be widely available, and we have a problem because there are probably a couple of million of them or more out there at this point. And the gun manufacturers are in no way held accountable for marketing these weapons to young people.
We're speaking with New York State Assembly member Deborah Glick, a Democrat who represents New York's 66th Assembly District in Manhattan, including Greenwich Village. Boy, we've had quite a philosophical discussion so far, but I want to shift. We're down to 5 minutes left, if you can believe it.
No, I can't. And
I want to do a little bit more rapid fire here, and a key word on fire. Now, there's no question, I don't think, in anybody's mind. Even many conservatives now have come across the table when it comes to climate change. And we have something that seems to be developing into a new normal. Wildfire smoke. We've seen it overstretch New York and New England and parts of the country as a result of the wildfires in Canada. You know, we passed a bond act, what, $4.2 billion. We have a lot of climate and infrastructure needs in the state. And, you know, New York State has to worry about how do we mitigate things like wildfire smoke?
Well, you know, I think climate change is front and center. And you mentioned the bond act, which has a wide range of resources going to different kinds of water quality, open space, acquisition to preserve open space, support for local communities to upgrade their water systems so that whether it's septic systems or whether it's removing lead pipe from their service lines, a wide range of things that need to be done in many communities across the state. And, you know, we experienced what California, Oregon, and Washington have been living with for 3 years at least. And we're fortunate that we have not seen the actual fires here, but it is something that the state is going to have to focus on in terms of protecting the land in the Adirondacks, the Catskills. And in small places, we had a fire in in Minnewaska State Park that closed that park. And I don't recall whether that was a lightning strike or whether that was a carelessness of somebody who was, inappropriately setting a fire to, you know, have a cookout or what. But those kinds of things, we have to be more mindful and take action to ensure that our forests are maintained. We have a lot of dying trees because of climate change. Certain trees, the hemlocks that are being attacked by invasive species, they anchor our water supplies around the Finger Lakes, around New York City reservoirs, and that is what keeps the soil on the banks and prevents sedimentation in our reservoirs and our lakes. We have a very serious situation on many fronts. And so the state is committed to getting rid of fossil fuels as quickly as we can, increasing the strength of our electric grid, ensuring that we electrify more homes and that those homes are powered by renewable energy and not by fossil fuels. That is a serious challenge. New York State is trying to meet that challenge as quickly as possible, but we have people who are opposed and raise every objection that they can think of to slow our progress, and it cannot be allowed to happen. And I'm proud that as the new chair of environmental conservation, that we've taken steps. We've made it easier for geothermal boreholes to be made. They are under a different permitting process. If they go below 500 feet, they're treated as if they're an oil or gas well, when in fact they're simply putting down a pipe to create geothermal energy. And I'm proud that we've made what seems like a small change, but will make it easier and cheaper for people to use geothermal energy. So those are the kinds of things. We have to reduce our dependency on pesticides. We've passed a birds and bees bill. Hopefully the governor will be signing that soon to ensure that coated seeds that have been used prophylactically on corn, soybean, and wheat crops, that persistent neurotoxins that migrate into the soil and into our waterways are no longer the automatic choice of farmers, but is something that is used only for invasive species.
Yeah, and then you have that green ammunition bill. Isn't that a proposal you put out?
Yes, lead-free ammunition on state land. It only affects hunting on state lands, and it is intended to reduce the lead poisoning in scavengers and in the meat that is donated to food pantries around the state. I don't understand the opposition to that. We know that lead fragments and its microscopic pieces could be poisoning anybody who's eating that meat, and certainly has had a devastating impact on raptors. So, and it's only state land, which is 15% of the state. People are still permitted to poison their own lands.
Well, we'll wrap it up. There's so much more to talk about with Assemblymember Deborah Glick. She is the chair of the Environmental Conservation Committee in the New York State Assembly and represents the 66th Assembly District in Manhattan, a Democrat. It's always wonderful talking with you, and I hope this just means you'll be back again for another conversation on the Capital Connection.
Well, I appreciate that, David, and thank you very much. And we are always appreciative of WAMC's efforts to keep the public informed.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina.